When religions fail, they leave behind empty buildings, very useful empty buildings, like the Priory in Paris, that's now the Musée des Arts et Métiers, the Museum of Arts and Trades. For a few euro, you can pop in and see Foucault's original pendulum and the artist's model, the very first artist's model of the Statue of Liberty. But right now, there's also an exhibition there that celebrates failure. It looks a bit like a trade fair, but you go in and find on display a new Coke, that spectacular failure, the $2 bill, a golf club that doubled as a urinal, Apple Vision Pro, thalidomide, and on it goes, a parade of flops and failure. The exhibition, It's Travelling the World, is the work of a clinical psychologist, Dr. Samuel West, whose mantra is the only way to make real progress is learning from failure. Samuel West joins me now from California. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Samuel, how have different countries responded to the Museum of Failure?
Oh, great question to start off. There's very clear differences between how different countries or regions respond to failure, more than I actually anticipated. So, for example, the museum started in Sweden, and this, you know, Nordic countries have a fairly accepting sort of, they're not pro failure or they don't glorify it, but you know, they have a good social security network, and when you fail, things will still pretty much turn out okay. And they're quite open societies as well, and low hierarchy. That's not true in the rest of the world. So, for example, in South Korea, Japan, even China, the relationship to failure is far more conflicting. And then you have the United States. Right now I'm in California, Northern California, and this is the birthplace of the fail forward, Silicon Valley, move fast and break things, fail, and then stand up and fail again, and we'll throw some more money at you attitude. So there's huge differences in how people relate to failure.
There is such a rich history of failure of the human race.
Oh, yes.
Samuel, how on earth did you decide that these exhibits, and I do want further further details, by the way, of the golf club that doubles as urinal, how these exhibits best exemplify failure?
Oh, you give me far too much credit. These exhibits do not best illustrate failure. These are the exhibits I found. These are the exhibits that I have to display. There are so many failures that I don't have artifacts from. And a lot of the failures in the museum on display are failures of commercial sort of consumer products that made it to market. And that's why I have them, because they were mass produced. There are a lot of failures, whether it be ideological failure, medical failures, political, government spending failures, where Australia has a few of those, where I don't have a physical artifact, which makes it difficult to show in the museum. Yeah,
but you've got you've got Brexit there. What?
Yeah.
How do you illustrate the octopus armed failure of Brexit?
I think for the Brexit, we had a lorry, a truck, with some British pounds notes in it, and the lorry crashed into a wall. That's how we illustrated Brexit, because it was a financial catastrophe. When you don't have a tangible item, you have to get creative with the representation of it.
Now, just before, look, I don't want to forget this. A golf club that doubles as a urinal. Now,
this one,
Samuel, could you please explain?
So are you a golfer?
My whole family are, which is why I'm not.
Okay. Well, then you might get a kick out of this. You can tease them. So this is a golf club called the Euro Club, not Euro as in Europe, but Euro as in urine. So it's for, you take it in, put it in your golf bag, and then when you're out on the field, and you need to urinate, you know, that's a problem because it's far away from any toilets. You can just simply put on the green privacy towel, clip it onto your belt, and then you, you know, discreetly place the golf club under this towel, and you urinate into the top of the golf club. And then you screw the cap back on, and then you empty the golf club at the nearest facilities.
And this failed?
Surprising, yeah. It's a good idea. I think one of the reasons it failed is the late night commercials for the product were hilarious. The ads were that the privacy shield, this towel, made it possible to urinate discreetly when playing golf with, quote, lady golfers. It's hilarious.
But out comes the towel. Everybody knows what you're doing. I mean, there are trees.
It's kind of hard.
Samuel, golf,
hey,
golf
don't
courses.
Don't argue with me about this.
No, I'm sorry. Look, you're quite right. You're not to blame. I just think, you know, perhaps you could use the trees. But look, I want to talk about different kinds of failure.
Yes.
Because it seems to me that the sort of underlying lesson of the museum is failures along the way and failures on the path to perhaps success. But what about utter failure? What about things that lead nowhere? They're just such a failure.
Yeah. This is one of the problems because my client, I'm an organizational psychologist, so I consult these companies on how to become more innovative and how to accept failure and harness and learn from it. And one of my problems is that I often get clients, these corporate clients, who say, oh, we'd really like to hire you or rent your museum for our event, but could you please, like, can we call it sort of stepping stones for success? Like, they don't want to use the word failure, and of course then I refuse. But it is difficult for people and for organizations, governments to talk about failure in a productive way. And one of the issues is, can you please only showcase failures for our event, failures that led to success? And I'm like, no, that's only part of the failures that are actually, you know, stepping stones to success. Most failures just end with misery, disappointment, and lost man hours and money, and lead nowhere. But we still need them.
Yes. But how do you take the commercial failures that are really intriguing failures, like New Coke, which I'd like to discuss in a moment. But then you also set up Kodak as a failure. But that's a failure of a different kind, isn't it? Because this is
totally.
This is a company who made immense wealth from a product that was superseded.
Yeah, Kodak is one of my absolute favorite stories because it's a shame that people assume that they know the story of Kodak's rise and fall.
Tell.
Few people do. Kodak was at their peak, the world's probably richest, one of the absolute richest companies and most successful. They literally printed money, more or less. their main offices in upstate New York had extra parking. They doubled the parking area. I'm imagining this must be in the 60s, 70s. Doubled the parking area because the employees at Kodak made so much money they could afford cars. Everyone could afford a car. And their success, financial success just continued. And they made all their money by selling film and photochemicals. And then in the 70s, they started experimenting with digital cameras. And by the 90s, they actually manufactured digital cameras. So Kodak was a pioneer. They invented the digital camera, and they were by far, you know, one of the more successful manufacturers of digital cameras.
And people I didn't know that.
No, exactly. And then people say, oh, yeah, Kodak. Oh, yeah, they made film cameras and they, you know, digital cameras killed them. Like, no, got it wrong. They invented digital cameras and they were very successful. So I remember my dad here in California, he was one of those guys who buys stuff, you know, early adopters. So, yeah, bought a lot of stuff that didn't work out. And one of those was, I remember the digital camera. It came in a huge box, the camera, and it came with a printer and four pages of photo paper. So Kodak was trying to make money on digital cameras by getting people to take photos and print them on their expensive paper. So the entire box was basically, here you have a camera and a printer, buy some more paper.
Yes.
And this gets at the actual cause to their downfall, because when people started sharing, you know, early 2000s, 2005, there, 10, people were sharing photos without ever printing them. And Kodak was so stubborn, they refused to change their business model, stubbornly trying to make money only on the photo paper. But when people stopped printing them, Kodak was doomed. So their business model, had they just changed their business model into the sharing of photos, they would be, you know, probably Instagram today.
You were briefly in Australia. Now, tell us,
yes,
what did you learn about failure in Townsville?
I have to choose my words wisely here.
No. You're a long way from Townsville.
I'm a long way from Townsville. I love Townsville. At the time I was, you know, just a young psychologist, so I wasn't, you know, waiting around in the swamp of failure. But one thing that I do that I think the Australians, maybe all Australians or just up there in Queensland, you know, they're very quick to have sort of to get perspective by finding humor in situations. So they can have a good laugh at failure, their own failures, and probably in particular others, the failure of others. And that's helpful. Just, you know, having a laugh and being able to talk about it and, you know, shrug it off and say, I screwed up. That's a good, you know, starting point to having some meaningful discussions about failure. The worst kind is, of course, if it's only pointing the finger and having this Schadenfreude of joy of seeing other people fail. That then it turns more negative, but having a laugh is a good way to get started.
Do you think we Australians can accept that we have failed at something?
Yes, I think so. There is a bit of Australia has, unfortunately, a bit of the same thing that Sweden and Norway have going for them. This, in Sweden, they call it the law of Jante. I think you call it the tall poppy syndrome.
Yes, the tall poppy syndrome.
No one's allowed to succeed. And if you succeed and then you fail, then, the judgment is harsh.
Samuel.
Australia has some bad stuff of that going on.
Samuel. I'm going to put to you a different theory about the tall poppy syndrome in Australia.
Oh, okay. Let me. I'm all ears.
All ears. Okay. I don't think we attack people who are great successes. I think we only start getting stuck into people when their success begins to wane, when the poppy is starting to wilt. Then we move in with relish.
Attack. You attack.
When we really attack.
That's terrible.
It's terrible, but I think it's true.
But think about this. So, okay, I'm gonna buy your theory. But think about this. it's a weird thing in society, and this is not limited to Australia. I think this is universal. Society needs these bold risk takers, right? Whether it's in medicine or in politics or in technology, you know, these are on the verge of being crazy people, right? Who do things that nobody else would do. We need those to push things forward, to develop and for progress. So on the one hand, society, lifts these people up and glorifies them as successful, you know, whether it be money or status or whatever accomplishments. But at the same time, just like you said here with your tall puppy syndrome theory, when you're not shining in success, society is very, very harsh and very quick to judge and to criticize when things are not going perfectly well, like when you're not at your peak. So society both rewards risk taking, but also criticizes and penalizes it.
Yes, Samuel.
It's a paradoxical situation, you know?
A great paradox. Samuel, thanks so much for joining us on the show. I've been talking to Samuel West, founder of the Museum of Failure, in Paris at the moment, soon to go to London, and it will continue its journey around the world. It might even get to us in Australia one day. I think that would be a very sound idea.